Skyline's new chicken chili is here. Now you can enjoy that legendary Skyline taste with a new protein option. Try Skyline's chicken chili on Waze, Coney's, and all your Skyline favorites. Feeling good. It's Skyline time.
This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Boucher with Professor H.J. Mackinder, International Relations, commenting on Moscow's point of view. Salient over these last hours, Moscow is closing off access to outside media. Moscow has directed the Duma to pass a law, I believe it was 400-0, to punish with severe prison anyone reporting news that is called misinformation or disinformation about the war. There are workarounds. The BBC has provided information about how someone in Moscow or in Rostov near the front can access the BBC headlines. But in any event, the intention is clear that anyone using or disseminating information from outside of Russia is suspect as committing treason in Russia. The Russian markets have collapsed. The stock market is closed, perhaps indefinitely. The Russian Central Bank does not have access to its funds, not its funds in New York, nor its funds in Switzerland, nor its funds in Japan. We have reason to believe that it doesn't even have access to the renminbi certificates to be cashed in that it holds. It does have gold, but it needs to sell that gold physically from Moscow to where? Maybe the Gulf, maybe not. The most important detail over these last hours is that the debate is underway to cut off Russian energy sales, meaning there will be no source of income from outside. This means the ruble is worthless. It means that the asset class in Russia is now facing beggary, indefinitely. It also means that large corporations, Coca-Cola, Pepsi-Cola, all corporations doing business in Russia are either leaving or looking to leave. I talked to the airport in Moscow these last days to one of my colleagues and correspondents. He was flying to Bishkek, Kyrgyzstan, because that's the only way he could get home to Britain. He said that other members of the foreign press corps were leaving or making plans to leave. There were also large numbers of the foreign community, called the German community by the Russians. Who knows why? It dates back several hundred years. They were planning to leave, and Russians, especially the intelligentsia, planning to leave in the next days, if they can get out. So, Professor, Moscow's point of view at this point is that it is under siege, financial siege, and at the same time concerned about the protests that have already broken out across Russia. What is Moscow's point of view? What is the Kremlin's point of view at this point in the war?
Well, I think that Mr. Putin, let's start with him, because he's the guy who's in charge. He is so invested now in this war that to settle for anything less than a complete victory would be a humiliation for him and unacceptable. So he's in that state of mind where what we call the tyranny of sunken costs, or in this case, the tyranny of sunken ego, is going to lead him to say we're going to fight it out on this line no matter what. So they are, as you indicate, under Mr. Putin's guidance, they are hunkering down for a long war. And the Russians have experience with long wars. And the only hope of avoiding this is a leadership change, because I don't think that Mr. Putin, all of his sort of canny opportunism and so forth, crafty opportunism that people saw. There's nothing crafty about what he's doing now. He's seeing his whole plan just collapse in front of him. But on the other hand, he does have substantial military resources. So Mr. Putin is going to keep punching until he wins, no matter what the cost. And it's up to the other Russians to be sure that he doesn't encompass the destruction of Russia, which has accomplished a great deal since the end of communism, as part of saving himself. He has public support. He has taken over. He's closed the private media. He's putting in censorship in a way that you closing off the country from foreign information. The people who were planning to leave at the last minute are now leaving, and we'll see whether they get out. But the signal that we're getting from Russia is we're in this for keeps. This is very, very bad news for us, because I think to the extent that Washington has a strategy, it is a diplomatic strategy and an economic strategy, and to the extent that Europe has any strategy, it's the same. But Russia may be falling apart economically, but she is still capable of delivering an incredible military punch, although things go wrong. But she is capable of fighting a brutal and bloody war to a very, very bloody finish. And that's not going to be good for Russia. It's not going to be good for anybody. If Putin is removed, remember, the Russians are experts at removing people from power. Behind the curtains, we never know how it happens. Violence is involved, but it's still a mysterious process. I think there is a possibility that Putin will be removed, but he's, of course, aware of this, and he's doing everything he can to avoid it. And if he has a lot of Russian sort of nationalist sentiment behind him, that makes removing him difficult. And furthermore, if you remove him, what then is the policy that follows? Are you going to surrender? Are you going to end the war? We've gotten ourselves far enough into this war, and Putin's gotten himself far enough into this war that no one's quite sure how to turn it off. Well, if it's left on, all I can say is this: the prospects are very, very grim. What we're looking at is a protracted war without mercy that will most likely escalate. It will spread, and it will draw in others. And nobody, certainly not the United States, and not even the Russians, are really prepared for this. But this is what wars, those of us who study geography and study the history of war, this is what wars tend to do. And it's a very, very dark prospect.
Your students, very sophisticated students, very well read, do they evidence an understanding of the Katyn Forest massacre? Do they know what the Soviets did and then became our allies, even though we had strong evidence that they were mass murderers?
Well, I don't know exactly, although I have studied Russian history, but the way that Russian history is taught in America today and the way that the Cold War is understood in our universities and in our government is through the lens of what should be called Cold War revisionism, which is the argument that really Lenin and company, they weren't threatening. The same argument is made about the Chinese communists. They weren't initially threatening, but the United States in particular made grievous diplomatic mistakes that alienated them and turned them away. And this is essentially what is now mainstream Cold War history. So something like the Katyn massacre, which you mentioned, which was ghastly, and has finally been shown by Mr. Yakovlev and the others using the Soviet archives. They were opened, and Mr. Yakovlev was in charge, and he was one of the great towering figures of recent Russian history. Now he died in 2005. He was the person that convinced Gorbachev that really things could go on this way and that they had to be changed. But I would say that the average students that I encounter, even those who were well-informed, and even more importantly, the professors in America's universities and so forth, some of them know about the atrocities that the Soviet communists carried out. Some of them have some idea of the horrors of the Ukrainian famine and of... I mean, the estimate by Yakov Levin, his book, is that the Soviet Union, in time of peace and good weather, cost the lives of 70 million people, 70 million people. And the same is the estimate for China. I would say that that the professoriate in America doesn't teach this. They don't like to study about it. And I would say that the foreign policy elite avoids thinking about it, because it poses problems that give us all terrible headaches and bad dreams. But unfortunately, this is the truth. And I do not think that our scholarly community or our policy community is taking this on board.
It is said of Clemenceau of France that he was a deeply cynical man who had one illusion, and it was France, and it caused us all a century of trouble. We're still in it, the Versailles Treaty. So, can we say this of Putin? Does it enlighten that he's a deeply cynical man with one illusion, Russia? And what is his illusion of Russia? What is he projecting? What vision does he have that has caused this violence?
Well, that I think is just a marvelous commentary, because Clemenceau was a very strange man. He was violently anti-clerical. He was a Republican in the French sense. He had no idea of a constitutional monarchy, but he did have an illusion. Well, what is the idea of Russia? Let me just contrast two figures. One is Mr. Putin, who's the midget in this comparison, and the other is Peter the Great, who ruled from 1682 to 1725 and was 6'8" tall. Peter the Great's vision of Russia was that Russia should be a European power and should be a European-style country. And all of his modernization and so forth in Russia, the building of St. Petersburg Harbor was designed to open a window to Europe. He saw Russia's future as being integrated with Europe. And, of course, it was under the Peter the Great that the schism occurred in the Orthodox Church, whereas Peter's patriarch made changes so that the Russian Orthodox Church and the Greek Orthodox Church would be more compatible. A whole bunch of Russians said, no, you make the sign of the cross with only two fingers, and that's it. So you still have the so-called old believers in Russia. But Peter had a cosmopolitan vision, a European-oriented vision, and so did Catherine the Great. She was an autocrat, but Catherine the Great, who sort of dominates the next century, greatly admired mainstream European liberal thought, and she wanted to be progressive and all the rest. Putin sees Russia as somehow, it's the old contrast between the Westernizers, Peter the Great, Catherine the Great, and the so-called Slavophiles, who say, no, no, the Slavic world, the Orthodox, the Russian Orthodox Christian world, this civilization is entirely distinct from Europe. It's threatened by European values and mores, and it should stand on its own in a kind of splendid dominance. I think the lesson of history is that no country can really do that, and Russia in particular can't do that. That was what the Soviet Union was trying to achieve, kind of autarky under a distinct social system. But I think Putin's vision is not that of Peter the Great or Catherine the Great or of the Russian governments before communism. He still has this idea of Russian exceptionalism, even though he is surrounded. Russia is in the middle of Eurasia, and it is surrounded by lots of foreign countries, and it cannot function if it tries to control all those countries. It has, as Peter the Great understood, and as Catherine understood, and as Stolypin understood, it has to change itself so that it's more compatible with Europe. And in fact, there was a time at the beginning of the late 19th and early 20th century when Russia really functioned as a part of Europe in alliances, in education, in diplomacy, and all sorts of things. The Soviets burned all those bridges, and Putin is recoiling from the idea of a cosmopolitan or globalized Russia. He's saying, no, it's going to be a society that is sufficient unto itself, that's based on a unique Russian culture, of which he doesn't know anything about it, but this is what he thinks. He's a sort of a Russian isolationist, as it were.
Professor H.J. Machender, International Relations, the Friends of History Debating Society, the Kiev point of view, the Brussels point of view, the Moscow point of view. I'm John Batchelor.